All right, friends, we're about to get started with an episode to fuel your New Year's weekend.
Noisemakers are not included.
Sadly, but first we want to remind you all about a new, I guess we can call this a service that we're providing.
Sure.
It's called the Instant Icebreaker.
That's right. You just text the word icebreaker to 677-677, and we'll text you one of the many jokes we use to start our show, so you'll never be without a lame gag again.
That's right. Millions of dollars of satellite and cellular technology has made this possible at last. Once again, just text the word icebreaker to 677-677 and see which joke you get. Standard text messaging rates may apply.
I used it on my niece and nephews this weekend, and they thought I was the funniest guy in the room for a second.
Do it, you people.
And now, since we're on the subject, here's your icebreaker.
So here we go. I've got a wee joke for you. How does NASA organize a party?
I don't know.
They plan it.
I'm Rico Galliano.
I'm Brendan Francis Newnham, and from APM American Public Media, this is the Dinner Party Download. Culture, food, and humor to fuel your party conversations.
You just got a joke from actor Sam Heughan, star of the acclaimed TV series Outlander. That'll help break the ice. Believe it or not, that was the most popular joke we aired this year,
which earns
it a place on this, our Best of 2016 show, featuring our favorite moments of the last 12 months and proving maybe this wasn't such a bad year after all.
It did have its moments, everybody, and you're going to hear coming up. Conversations with movie star Saoirse Ronan and filmmaker Guillermo del Toro, music from R&B genius Jamila Woods, and Bolivian Llama Party.
The best named eatery of the year. But first, as always, we start with small talk, in which we ask our NewsHound friends to share the story they are going to be talking about at parties this weekend.
Here's a quick look back at some of those, starting with this one from Paris Review contributor Sadie Stein.
I'm going to be talking about a horror film written by robots.
Which in itself sounds like a horror film.
Exactly.
That's true.
This movie, Impossible Things, partially used augmented intelligence software to analyze audience response data and figure out exactly what would scare them. And the result of this, people wanted ghosts, family relationships, a piano scene, and a bathtub scene.
They got me all figured out.
They got it.
What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Arby's is starting to sell deer meat sandwiches.
A German streetcar system has installed flashing lights in the ground because they found that pedestrians weren't looking up from their phones to see if traffic was coming.
There is a really fun thing happening in South Korea.
Okay.
The city of Seoul recently sponsored a competition where people were sitting in a park for 60 to 90 minutes to see who could maintain the lowest resting heart rate.
We're going to talk about Thomas Jefferson's hair, which just sold at auction for over $6,800.
I guess that's impressive.
That actually seems like a bargain for Thomas Jefferson's hair.
Right? Because John Lennon's hair sold for $35,000.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How do you display hair after you buy it without looking
that
like a disgusting slob?
That is such a good question. I have so many questions about why do you want this? Is this extremely creepy?
I think you display it in your shower drain.
What story are you going to be talking about at parties this week?
I'm going to be talking about how my cat's tongue is going to disrupt the future.
I'm going to be talking about how rudeness can kill.
Well, Britain's spies have been illicitly accessing people's medical information, phone records and stuff, so they can look up the birth dates and addresses of people they need to send birthday cards to.
News from Japan. For $115 American dollars for 2 hours, you can rent a friend.
Hold on. Full disclosure, we have to tell the audience this is how we met you.
Yeah. And now, time for cocktails. Once again, we tell you something that happened in history, then give you a fitting drink to serve along with it.
It's like history is a calendar at a New Year's party that's fallen off the fridge and into a puddle of spilled booze.
Very appropriate.
Thank you.
And for this best of show, we've selected our favorite historical tale of the year about the most important aviator you have likely never heard of.
Here's our Michelle Phillippe with the story.
Bessie Coleman's life took a while to get off the ground. Part African American, part Native American, she grew up poor in segregated turn-of-the-century Texas. She couldn't afford to finish college and wound up in Chicago at age 23 doing manicures. That's where everything changed. Among the folks she met in the Windy City, soldiers returning from World War I. They told fantastic stories about flying aces like Eddie Rickenbacker. Eventually, she got a crazy idea to become an aviator. Now back then, just a handful of American women were licensed to fly, and the top American flying schools wouldn't even teach a woman of color. So Bessie took French lessons, and with the help of a wealthy patron, sailed to way more enlightened Paris, where she earned her pilot's license in 1921, 2 years before Amelia Earhart. When Bessie returned to the U.S., she was a sensation, the first black female pilot. The press fawned over her. Hollywood offered movie roles. And for years, she traveled the country performing stunt-laden air shows for crowds of thousands. People called her Queen Bess. Bessie's goal was to start a flying school for people of color. But she never got the chance. During rehearsals for an air show, she crashed to her death in April 1926. 80 years later, she was inducted into the National Aviation Hall of Fame. And today, in the Chicago, Oakland, Tampa, and Frankfurt airports, you'll find roads named after her.
So that was the history. Now for the drink to serve along with it. We are speaking with Michael Mendoza. He is bartender at Flight 112 in Chicago, the city that launched Bessie into the stratosphere. And Michael, you heard the history. What drink did that inspire you to create?
Well, Bessie's life inspired me to create Bessie's Biplane, a variation of a paper airplane.
That's a cocktail?
That's a cocktail. Indeed it is.
What's in the original?
The original is going to be bourbon, Aperol, Amaro Nonino, and lemon juice.
Wow, that doesn't sound papery at all. It sounds like a stiff drink right to your face.
Sounds like a stiff drink, exactly. It sounds like a hard-charging one as well.
What is your variation thereof?
My variation is going to be using Still Moon White Lightning, and that is the largest African-American-owned distillery in the United States, and they're based out of Texas.
What is that? What kind of liquor is it?
White Lightning Moonshine.
Now, what is moonshine?
Moonshine is unaged whiskey. Whiskey, you're going to throw it into a oak barrel, and that's how it's going to get its distinctive, lovely brown color.
Oh, I see. So moonshine is basically just white whiskey.
White whiskey, exactly.
And it's kind of the jet fuel of the liquor world, so I guess that makes sense. what's next?
We're going to be using, instead of Amaro Nonino, Suze, which is a French aperitif that is both bitter and sweet.
And obviously the French connection, because Bessie went overseas to get her pilot's license.
Exactly. She went over to Paris.
And what else is in this thing?
There's a bit of orange Creole shrub from Clement, and I tried to connect that with part of her Seminole roots out of Florida. Florida, obvious orange connections.
Oh, that's right. She was a Seminole Native American.
That is correct. She was the first African American and Native American woman to receive a pilot's license.
To take to the air. And they're based out of Florida, that tribe, I guess.
Indeed.
Okay. And finally?
Equal parts lemon juice. Brings it all back together.
Cool. By the way, you're there in Chicago. Have you actually noticed Bessie's road on the way to O'Hare?
Actually, we are in Elmhurst, which is about 2.5 miles just south of O'Hare Airport. So on a nice sunny day, if you really feel like going for a walk, you can get on up there and see Bessie Coleman drive and watch the airplanes take off and land.
All right, but see, I think we could find a better way to honor Bessie than to name a road after her there, because that airport is a mess, man.
It indeed is. Flying in or out of it is always an adventure and testing patience.
Well, the adventure part she would like.
Yeah.
And Brendan Michael also suggested that we use, quote, our origami skills to make a little airplane out of orange peel as a garnish for that drink.
Our origami skills. I can make a wadded up ball from a tissue. Looks like a wonton.
that's another ancient art.
Yeah.
But folks, if you want to attempt to make that garnish and not a piece of garbage, please take a photo or a video of you doing that and send it to us via dinnerpartydownload.org. And now the soundtrack, in which a great musician DJs your, in this case, New Year's party.
And here with that is poet and musician Jamila Woods. Her song collaborations with Chance the Rapper shot her into prominence, and her soulful debut album Heaven is high on many critics' best of 2016 lists. Appropriately, Jamila provided our favorite playlist of the year, and here she is to share it.
Hi, this is Jamila Woods, and for my dinner party, I'm going to do something a little different. It's going to start a little bit later. We'll be outside under the stars, and we're kind of just there all night and going to get started. This is my dinner party soundtrack. The first track is Why I Love the Moon by Phony People.
That's why I love the moon. Every night it's there for you.
Whenever I make a playlist, it is to kind of flex my musical knowledge, hoping that someone will ask, oh, who is this? I haven't heard this before. And I get to tell them. It's a love song, and it's also very cosmic, which I like. It's kind of like Afrofuturistic vibe. Part of Afrofuturism is just the idea that because Black history, you know, there's been so many struggles, it's kind of a radical act to imagine ourselves in the future. Every night. The next song is Take Away by Missy Elliott featuring Ginuwine.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. You're so incredible.
I love this song because Missy Elliott is really singing on it. She's known for danceable and like sing-alongable rap songs, but this song, she's using her voice in a different way. It definitely has like a sensuality to it, but it's just so sweet to me because it's just saying for once in our lifetime, let's just have it just be us and not all this superficial stuff, you know?
I love everything about you. Take away, yeah. You're golden platinum chains. Your love to me is platinum, babe.
This would probably be the time when someone grabs someone and like wants to slow dance on the grass or something. It's just really, I love the song so much.
I just wanna be the perfect match. We become so attached.
Stop the ballad.
This song is called Les Fleurs by Minnie Riperton. I could really never make a playlist without someone from Chicago. I love the part in the song where she's not saying real words. It's cool to have those moments in your art where maybe you're speaking to a particular community or maybe you're just speaking to yourself. Not everything has to be legible to everyone. It's not exclusionary, it's just providing layers and making the art richer. So the party is winding down. The sun's almost coming up. You can kind of hear birds starting to chirp, and it's kind of time to kick everybody out of your house, but you also want to send them away with something beautiful. And in an act of shameless self-promotion, I will play one more song, Emerald Street, from my new album. Emerald Street is the street that I was born on, and I kind of romanticize it. I wrote this song about a dream date that I might have there.
I be in my nightgown, chicken wings ready. If you bring the massage, we can go steady. You can have the coleslaw, we can share the one straw. Sit outside on my block. Die, die, do, die, do, die, do. On Emerald Street, where we used to.
dinner party soundtrack from Jamila Woods, our favorite of the year. Her debut album is called Heaven.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but coming up, movie star Saoirse Ronan and Brendan sees his future in a Bolivian dumpling.
It's delicious and short-lived when the Dinner Party Downloads Best of 2016 show continues.
That's so scary.
Welcome back to the Dinner Party Download, the arts and leisure section of Public Radio. I'm Brendan Francis Noonan.
I'm Rico Galliano, and here's stage and screen star Rebecca Hall telling me her secret talent.
I can do an uncanny impersonation of Bjork.
Please do that now.
My party trick is to do Bjork doing any song that you tell on the spot. Any song that you say, then I'll do it in the style of Bjork.
Oh, God.
I can't do it now.
Oh, come
I
on. Yeah, of course you have to do it now. This is a radio show, and this is an audio trick that you have. Oh, what song must it be? I'm going to ask the booth, what is the least Bjork song?
Yeah, that's the trick.
Our producer, Jackson, wants it to be Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
There you go.
Rebecca Hall. She's up for a British Actress of the Year award for playing the title role in the film Christine, mm-hmm. and she's sadly not up for a Grammy for the performance you just heard.
Nonetheless, that was one of our favorite moments of the year, which makes it the perfect addition to this, our Best of 2016 episode.
Woohoo!
In a few minutes, you will hear Brendan eat his favorite food of the year, but first, let's take a look back at our favorite guests of honor.
All right, and for me, this was easy. It would be actor Saoirse Ronan.
Yep.
It was a big year for her. She earned an Oscar nomination for starring in the film Brooklyn, and she made her Broadway debut in a revival of Arthur Miller's intense drama The Crucible. But when we spoke in May, I found her insightful, but hardly self-serious.
Which was especially evident when Brendan asked her our two standard questions, starting with this one.
What question are you tired of being asked at dinner parties?
Well, Brendan, I think we all know the only answer could ever be.
I know.
How do you pronounce your name? I was going to do an American accent, but I didn't. I stopped myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asked about my name an awful lot.
It is. I think it's galling. I've watched a lot of interviews with you to prepare for this.
Yeah.
And every single interview begins with a little game about your name.
About my name.
About your name.
We're teaching the world kind of one chat show at a time.
That's right.
I think it started because I've been saying it for years, obviously. Like, whenever I've had to
do
press,
name?
It's my name. So I say it most days, even if there's no one around.
Mm.
And so I've done press in the past and really tried to drive a home that this is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So it's not as frequent now.
Yeah.
But the name question is what I get asked the most.
And I didn't ask you.
And you didn't ask me.
Thank you.
But you knew I was going to say it, though.
Maybe. But I also didn't say your name, so there we go.
You've actually,
I haven't said it yet.
You haven't,
Maybe I'll say it for the end
I've
of the interview.
I've said your name once, Brendan, twice.
Thank you for saying my name correctly. Okay, so our other question is, tell us something we don't know, something you haven't shared in interviews.
About me, or just
it could be about you, or anything. It could be an interesting fact about the world.
This is such a Catholic Irish thing to say.
Yeah, well...
But the reason why the shamrock is our sort of symbol is because when St. Patrick, who was actually, we think he was Welsh, came over and introduced Christianity to Ireland, in order to teach the pagans the Holy Trinity, he used a shamrock to do it because it's got three leaves.
Right. Is that true?
That's true.
What about the fourth leaf? Like,
that's
what does
a clover.
Mean?
That's different to a shamrock.
They're not the same thing, which just has different size leaves?
They're probably cousins or something, but they're not.
Hmm.
They're not the same thing.
All right.
So shamrock only has three leaves,
mm-hmm.
and apparently he used to use that. So they say.
Who are they?
Paddy,
did you learn
them.
That?
You know them.
Saoirse Ronan. See, I can say her name, Saoirse.
Nice.
Giving me a botany lesson last spring. By the way, to be specific, Rigo, a four-leaf clover is a type of shamrock called a white clover.
All right. Good trivia for St. Patrick's Day.
That's right.
Assuming someone's sober enough to remember it.
Also right.
Anyway, my favorite guest of honor this year, Brendan, had to be filmmaker Guillermo del Toro.
Ah, yes.
He's, of course, the mind behind the dark horror fantasy Pan's Labyrinth and the new Netflix animated series Troll Hunters. We spoke this summer at the L.A. County Museum of Art about an exhibit there of his personal collections of movie memorabilia and other stuff.
Yeah, like a whole section devoted to his insect collection. Yeah. And Rico asked why he seemed especially fascinated by cockroaches.
The thing about insects that is freaky, and particularly of roaches, they are not afraid of you. You know, these things are 100 times your size, smaller, and they attack you. They go for you, and that is incredibly scary. It's a little bit like Joe Pesci with a knife.
They're the Joe Pesci of the animal world.
Yes, they, what are you, funny? You know, they come at you.
Well, but then why celebrate them and have them in your house in altars?
I celebrate what I like and what I fear, you know? And in my movies, I think the only monsters that are remote because of their perfection are insects, you know? They are, if God made the mistake with an avocado by putting too big a pit, you know, God got everything right, apparently, with insects, because they are perfect, reproductive, eating, constructing machines, but they lack a soul. They have a sort of a hive mentality. They die for the hive, but they don't have a moral choice. They represent uncomplicated, horrible, unstoppable nature for me, and they are perfection, but they are not a perfection that is pleasing. I am a lover of imperfection, and I celebrate it.
Why?
Only because it's a standard we can all live by, you know? I think imperfection is a highly attainable goal, whereas perfection isn't. It isn't. And I think that we live in a world that goes, it's a pendulum swing socially of completely staged perfection. We present ourselves politically impeccable, perfect, shiny teeth. We don't sweat. We wear the right clothes. And then you swing the pendulum and we are shooting each other. We're chewing on each other. We're grinding each other. And the pendulum, if it's not that extreme in one end, is not that extreme on the other. And in the middle, it's imperfection. And I think when we allow ourselves to be imperfect, fallible, grotesque even, we deal with it.
Filmmaker Guillermo del Toro, his animated Netflix series Troll Hunters just launched last week.
All right, and we wanted to toss in one last standout moment from our guests of honor this year. We've had a lot of great chats. We can only share some of them. Back in February, we aired our Notskers special, celebrating everything that wasn't nominated for an Academy Award, and we gave our Notsker for Best Performance to Maya Taylor.
Maya earned a slew of critics' awards for co-starring in the indie film Tangerine. She also became the first openly transgender actor to win an Independent Spirit Award. Here she is telling Brendan about her hometown.
I live in North Dakota, the home of the buffalo.
Okay. Have you seen any
the buffalo? Yeah, they're so cute, but they're so big. And the reason why I live in North Dakota is, for one, I'm in love with the most amazing guy in the whole entire world. I love him so much. And actually, that's where my first date was at, on the buffalo.
He took
me to go see the buffalo because I love animals.
Okay.
And I love living here because it's quiet. It's away from my Hollywood life.
Yeah.
You know, going to an airport and getting recognized is nice and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I just like to live simple.
I feel like a lot of people assume being transgender is probably easier on the coast, like in a city like L.A. or New York or San Francisco. Have you found that to be the case?
No. I mean, Tangerine didn't make it to North Dakota. Like, the theater's here, thank God.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, people don't know that I'm transgender, you know, by looking at me. I like that. You know, I can just live a normal life as a woman.
It's interesting. So in North Dakota, you can live a normal life as a woman, and you can also live as a non-actor, right? You're kind of just a civilian. So you have two layers of anonymity.
I always said when I got into this industry, I'd never let it change me. I'd never get big-headed about how much money I'm making or what I'm doing or this or that. I was always going to remain the same person who lived in a normal home, who ate the same food, who still talked to the same people and acted the same way, the same sweet, humble person. I will always remain the same. I would never change.
Except for the pet buffalo that you have now.
I wish that I had a pet buffalo. I don't know where I'd keep it.
Maya Taylor, star of the indie hit Tangerine, beautifully shot entirely on smartphones, by the way.
That's right. You can find it streaming online. We urge you to check it out. And ditto for all our Guest of Honor interviewees this year. You can hear them for free by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, time to eavesdrop.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge starred in and wrote Amazon's acclaimed dark comedy series Fleabag. It's been nominated for a couple of Critics' Choice Awards. She also happened to tell the best story we overheard this year.
Hi, my name is Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and I'm going to tell you a little story about when a joke I thought was an excellent idea turned out not to be such an excellent idea. As an actress just coming out of drama school, one of the most important and dream jobs you can imagine would be to perform on the West End stage in London. And I had just won myself a role in Noel Coward's Hay Fever in the West End with an incredible cast of very respected and prestigious actors who I deeply admired. When you've been spending that much time with a bunch of people that you've only just met, a kind of hysteria sets in. You start having in-jokes, you start challenging each other backstage. There are all sorts of little games that are going on usually when you go to the theatre that the audience would have no idea what's going on. And there's a moment in the third act when I disappear off the side of the stage with one other actor. And then an on-stage actor runs up to that door, opens it, gasps in horror, so the audience believe that he's seen something a bit naughty going on behind the door. And then he slams the door closed, and then within a couple of seconds, my co-star Sam and I would run on stage looking a bit flustered and a bit naughty. But as that door would fling open, we had come up with a surprise for the on-stage cast. Sam and I would engage in some kind of ludicrous dumb show, which in theatre terms is sort of a story told through mime. So one of the first times that the door had opened, we began with such, you know, obvious go-to physical comedy, like I was doing a handstand, or Sam was wearing my costume, or we were wearing celebrity masks and doing extraordinary acrobatics. I think at some point there was a banana costume employed. After a couple of weeks, the tricks got more and more sort of high octane, and the pressure on us to come up with more original things to make the onstage cast laugh became sort of a bit more extreme. And eventually it became everybody's highlight of the show, the moment they opened the door and they'd see Phoebe and Sam doing something completely ludicrous. It was the final night, the cast patting each other on the backs, all saying to us, "We can't wait for your 15 seconds. We can't wait for that door to open." And Sam and I turning to each other in private going, "We haven't thought of anything. We have to think of something." And eventually, third act comes around. Sam and I are positioned outside the door. We hear the play on stage. Our cue is coming closer and closer by the second. And we're looking at each other and we're saying, "We haven't thought about this properly. This is awful. This is the big showdown, show-stopping moment." And as we were in a panic backstage, having not prepared anything, one of the stage managers suddenly turned around and said, "I know, I've got an excellent idea. Phoebe should show the cast her b-." And then the moment came. We heard the cue being called from the onstage actor. He started charging across the stage. I turned to Sam. "This is it. This is what we're doing. This is the best idea anyone has ever had." And I bend over. The door flies open. They pull up my dress. And there it is. The very centre of my behind, staring directly back at the entire cast of this very prestigious, well-respected production and play by Noel Coward. And in this very moment, as my back was turned and all was on display to them, I thought, perhaps this wasn't such a good idea. Moments later, the door closed. I had to redress myself and then run on stage. And I ran on stage and saw all these actors that I've admired my entire life looking ashen-faced, slightly shaken at me, disappointed in themselves and me for the fact that we had to share that experience. We managed to get through the final scene, and hilariously, no one mentioned it after that. Over the last few years, I have since bumped into some of the cast members who I put through that ordeal. One cast member in particular, I like to think, was rather impressed rather than traumatised by what she witnessed that night. And it was Olivia Colman, who has actually taken on a role in my show Fleabag. It sort of left me thinking that perhaps the way to Olivia Colman's heart is in fact through my...
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she created and stars in the Amazon series Fleabag. It's on many a year-end best-of list for good reason. And you are listening to the Best of the Dinner Party Download 2016 from American Public Media.
And we're wearing pants. And now time for the dinner portion of the Dinner Party Download.
Indeed.
The main course. This is the part of the show where we talk about food.
And this year we stuffed our faces with all manner of edibles in the name of journalism. We've eaten eel, pan, okonomiyaki we had.
Yes, which was a mouthful in more ways than one.
Of course.
But our favorite bite came from the Oropeza brothers of Bolivian Llama Party.
Hooray!
Yes.
Love that.
Now, this is the name of a food stand, not a political group, although I would vote for them. The brothers serve tasty dumpling-esque morsels called salteñas, which are a Bolivian delicacy. Mm. So one afternoon, I met up with David and Patrick, and I asked them, when do Bolivians tend to eat these things?
So these are typically sold as a midday snack. They're the appetizer to your lunch. So, you know, you're typically in Bolivia, like, your lunch is your biggest meal of the day.
I love the idea of a lunch appetizer.
Basically, they'll have tea and bread for breakfast, and then around 10 o'clock, they have a salteña, and their lunch consists of, like, three or four courses, followed by, like, a nap.
What a wonderful place.
And then you have a light dinner. So it's like the emphasis on lunch, which is really cool.
So I'm looking at this, and this looks like a robust empanada or sort of dumpling. It has a beautiful braid on it. It's the size of, what would we say that is? It's like a...
an iPhone 1, maybe?
A large beeper?
You guys are city kids, clearly. It's like the size of half of a mango.
Maybe a small avocado.
All right, so it's a... fat avocado with this kind of braid on top. A lot of cultures have these sorts of things. It's a delivery system for some sort of protein. What sets this apart from, say, an empanada?
Well, the dough is made with the yellow chili, and it's a Bolivian yellow chili called ají mirasol. That gives the dough a bit of a sweet taste, but the chili adds savory notes where it's not just like pie dough or it's just sugar. The inside is a gelatinized filling. So the idea is that in Bolivia, soup is everywhere. Soup is like, you know, you're not Bolivian if you don't eat soup. And inside is that soup. So you're getting bread and soup, but in a way where you can transport it to go to work. Because, you know, Bolivians are traditionally laborers. So you can take this with you and, you know, eat it. It stays warm for quite a while, so you can eat it whenever.
How does one keep soup in dough?
We cook it with the base of a gelatin. And when that chills, it's nice and firm, but you have to work fast. You roll out the dough, you fill it, and you braid it. And the braiding part is super important because if it's not strong, your soup will come right out.
Okay, and so what's the classic filling?
Traditionally, chicken and beef. What makes them special is the way they're flavored with the ají.
And so did you grow up eating these at home?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. It was we didn't eat them enough because it's very hard to find. There was only like one or two spots.
This isn't something a home cook would make because it's so labor intensive?
Well, if your mother really loves you, then she will spend the 4 days making this because you got to spend a day making the dough, another day making the filling, then rolling them, and then baking them. So... got to have a lot of brownie points with your mom if she's going to make these for you.
So is the takeaway that your mother doesn't love you?
She made us work for it, I think, is a better way to put it.
All right. So where does the name come from? Why is it called a salteña?
The story goes, the folkloric tale is a lady came from Argentina, a region in Argentina called Salta, and she was exiled from Argentina, came to Bolivia, needed to make money, and created this. And people called it a salteña because it was a lady from Salta who made it. And now every region in Bolivia makes their own different type of salteña. It's like the American French fry in Bolivia, pretty much.
But do they have salteña in Argentina?
They do. So we get a ton of Argentinians coming by the booth and being like, this is an Argentinian product. They just come to argue. They didn't even buy. They just argue. This is our product. You took it from us. And we're like, no, she came here and we created this tradition around it and the culture. And it just goes on. This guy comes every day.
I also read that... when you're eating with a group, the first one who spills the liquid has to pay for the whole thing?
There's so many different tales of this, too. So if you, like, eat a salteña and don't spill a drop on your plate, you'll be married quickly. And if you do spill, you won't get married at all. Or I've heard, what are some other ones? Do you remember?
I'm sure there's a lot that are, like, bad sex for 5 years or something.
Yeah,
or
just something also. Like, you're just banned from the community if you spill a drop on the plate, pretty much.
All right. Well, my destiny awaits in this bite here, so let's move towards it.
This one right here is our brisket salteña that kind of represents everyone's craze for smoked brisket in New York. So this is like salteñas in New York. So this is, has a bit of a smokier taste, but it's flavored with fennel and anise and red chilies.
So how do I eat this?
Okay, so you hold your salteña upright, the braid facing towards you. You take a bite out of the tip. Take a little bite out of there. You get the hole big enough, and you pour the yahua inside.
Yahua, it's like an herbal salsa, kind of?
Yeah, so basically this is the hot sauce, the salsa of Bolivia. Everyone's got it on their table. It's kind of like...
It's like Bolivia sriracha, pretty much.
Amazing. So we're going to pour this in the top of it?
Inside, yeah. Once you have the little hole in there, you pour the salsa inside, and you have two ways to go about it from there. You can take a spoon if you want to be delicate and make sure you don't get anything on yourself, or you can just really go in, slurp, okay, suck, and get the juice out, and then keep eating.
All right, I'm going to go for the second way, obviously, because that seems like the tougher way to do it. So can you record me while I do this? Okay. All right, so I'm going to put a little bit of this in, and then just go for it. Is it going to splatter all over me or no? Okay.
That was an ambitious bite he took. It was almost half the saltania. I've seen it happen before that someone's taken that kind of bite and then sauce just squirts all over themselves and hit somebody.
It didn't squirt. So is that just because I have really good eating skills?
Beginner's luck.
Does this mean I'm not going to get married?
Yeah, I think, no, well, you haven't. Oh, wait, there's a drop right there. I think that's it.
It's starting.
Wait, what does that mean again?
Bachelorhood for life, which isn't that bad in New York City, I feel like, so that's all right.
I hope my mom isn't listening to this. Alex and Patrick Oropeza, two of the three brothers behind Bolivian Llama Party.
Hooray!
That's right. It's like Pee-wee's Word of the Day.
I can't help
it. Bolivian eatery in New York City's Turnstile Food Court.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but in a minute, you will hear an all-star squad of etiquette advisors who helped make this year more polite, including Nick Offerman, Cameron Diaz, and more, when the Dinner Party Download Best of 2016 show continues. Welcome back to the Dinner Party Download, the arts and leisure section of public radio. I'm Rico Galliano.
I'm Brendan Francis Newnham, and here's the late Sharon Jones telling me something I didn't know about her.
I was born with extra fingers.
What?
Yeah, I had 12 fingers. See right there? See that mark? And it was
one
of
my goodness,
here.
There are these little bumps.
There you go. Now y'all know.
Sharon's are those a little extra freak. Fingers?
I'm a little alien.
On your pinky, you have a little protrusion.
Yeah, the little finger
was
about.
The beginning of another finger.
Yeah.
Is that to hold the microphone fast? Does that give you an extra?
I'm so glad.
When you're doing the mashed potato with a microphone, maybe that comes in handy.
Oh, yeah. So many times there was a man who met a girl
and took her hand. He told her, never will I leave you, my love. Soul great Sharon Jones. Sadly, the world lost her not long after we taped that conversation. Rest in peace.
Amen. And folks, you are joining us in the midst of our Best of 2016 show. A look back at memorable moments from the year. Coming up, a live performance from the aptly named musician Emmy the Great. But first, I'm not sure anyone would have called this a banner year for good manners, but you sure can't blame us for it.
That's right, because every week we posed your etiquette questions to some of the most sensitive or at least famous people we could find, and they rewarded us with immense wisdom or at least laughs.
That's
so
right.
We're going to take a look back at their insights, starting with this from comedian's comedian Norm MacDonald.
A listener named Jim wanted to know how to politely ask his neighbor to turn off a bright outdoor light that kept him awake at night. Norm responded thusly.
Well, sometimes you go at things from different angles. Rather than ask the guy, you can simply shield that light from hitting you.
Mm-hmm. Clever.
And I would say, get yourself a bag of moths and release them.
Uh-huh. Classic.
Yeah.
The old moth bag trick.
Moth bag.
Wouldn't they eat their way through the bag, though? Like, isn't that?
Oh, I see what you mean. No, it has to be a moth retardant bag.
Okay.
Yeah, can't be a wool bag.
No.
Yeah, this is clever. Okay, so Jim.
You just release a cloud of moths. They obscure the light, and all is well.
Cloud of moths. I should have said that.
There you go. Just the sort of practical advice you'd expect from Norm MacDonald.
Thank you, Norm. Another excellent etiquette moment came this year from comic Maria Bamford, who is known for openly addressing her own struggles with anxiety and for imitating her delightfully Minnesotan mom.
We got advice from both of them when a listener named Sheil asked simply, how should I talk to my hairdresser?
What I do is I switch hairdressers almost every month. I cannot bear to tell them that I don't want to talk at all. I just want to read my bookie book. I just say, keep switching hairdressers.
I think that's a good answer for Sheil, but what would your mom say?
Well, I have a wonderful hairdresser, and his name's Jesse, and he lives half the year in Palm Springs, so I don't always see him, but I would just say, how are you? Tell me what is going on in that incredible life of yours. He's a gay man, and he also teaches Pilates, and he is just fun.
There you go.
Maria Bamford, what a wonderful comedian and etiquette guest. But honestly, Rico, next time I think we should just pose every question to her mother.
She is just fun.
Fun.
Next up, etiquette advice from none other than movie star Cameron Diaz. What an amazing year this year. She fielded a question from a listener named Alvaro, who wondered what to do when someone questions whether he's really Hispanic.
I guess, you know, I know the feeling being Hispanic myself and not looking Hispanic.
Yeah, sure.
And I wish that I was able to speak Spanish when I was a kid because I always thought that would just show people.
That would prove it.
Exactly.
That would prove it. So I would just, if you speak Spanish, I would just speak Spanish to that person and blow their minds. Or you could do like me and just, you know, make a pot of black beans and bring it to people's houses and say, see, I'm Cuban.
Cameron Diaz, healing social rifts with beans.
I like bean diplomacy.
It's the best.
And speaking of cool people named Cameron, this year lots of folks got to know comedian Cameron Esposito from her acclaimed TV series Take My Wife. And we posed to her an etiquette question from a listener calling herself, quote, ambivalent sports fan.
That's right. Apparently, she and a friend were catching up during a basketball game until a couple two rows in front of them asked them to stop, quote, constantly talking. Ambivalent sports fan wondered if she and her friend were in the wrong.
I hate this person. I have to say, I think, well, yes. Okay, we have to look at the actual question. They said two rows in front of them?
Yeah.
At a basketball game.
So they were being pretty
loud. They were being just loud in a way.
Yeah.
I think like when you're having a full conversation, like catching up, I just think don't go to that thing. There are other places to go. Go to Starbucks, go to a restaurant, go to a house. Go to a house that you own or apartment that you rent. Rent a hotel room.
Airbnb a place.
Get it, just a car. You can get in an Uber.
An alleyway.
There's so many places to
get
go.
Get a talking apartment.
Just walk down the street. You know, walk down the street next to each other. But I think that you are a problem. I think you made bad choices.
This also happens, by the way, and this is terrible, at rock shows sometimes. It's a rock show. They're loud musical events. You feel bad telling somebody to keep their voice down, but there are people that will be right over your shoulder, like yelling conversations over rock music.
I had this experience, and I actually did ask that person to please. First of all, we were seeing Hall & Oates because we've got great taste in music.
I'm with you.
Greek Theater in Los Angeles, and it's built into a very steep mountain. It's built into a mountainside. So the people sitting directly behind us, their mouths were just exactly
where your ears are.
At our ears. Like, I don't even know. I can't even explain the closeness of their mouths to our ears. And they were having full-on conversation right when I was trying to figure out if she was a rich girl. So I had to turn around and be like, please stop talking.
I did not pay to hear you talk about where you parked your Audi.
I paid
to find out that about this man-eater this guy's been talking
It was so much more than where they parked their Audi. It was like full-on just like, how are everybody's jobs going?
Did they obey you?
This is actually what they said. They said, we are talking so loud because the people behind us are talking so loud.
How about you?
And I was like, so you are inflicting upon me what you've experienced in your own life to be terrible?
Yeah, that's horrible.
It's an awful way of dealing with a problem.
Comedian Cameron Esposito talking about the volume arms race.
Oh, God.
America, please heed her words.
For the sake of society, you're listening to the Dinner Party Download. We're in the midst of playing you our favorite etiquette advice of 2016. Next up, Parks and Recreation star Nick Offerman.
That's right. Now, some of you may have spent Christmas Eve watching the 10-hour-long viral video of Nick sipping scotch by a Yule log.
Hear, hear.
Speaking of which, one of our listeners asked him earlier this year what to do if one only has a single glass of good scotch left.
That's right. Do you drink it or offer it to your guest and pour yourself lousy scotch.
I have a very solid answer to this conundrum. In Japan, you traditionally, whether you're drinking scotch or sake and beer, those are the favorite libations on the island of Nippon, you never fill your own cup. You fill your neighbor's cup. And politely, they in turn keep yours full. This guarantees that everyone gets as drunk as you do, which is important in international negotiations.
That's right.
But more importantly, to me, it is a great metaphor for life. You know, I've written about in L.A. traffic, it's really easy to become infuriated because everybody in L.A., you know, it's the city of dreams. And so presumably 97% of the people on the road are chasing a dream of some sort.
Real fast.
And maybe 98%. So my technique is figure out how long it's going to take me to get someplace and then give myself an extra 15 to 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you can say to everyone, I understand you're chasing your dream. Go ahead. Instead of trying to jockey and be in that rat race. And by the same token, always give your friend the good scotch. If you have other less good scotch, you still have a glass of whiskey, dumbass. Like, if you have whiskey to drink, you're sitting pretty. Do you know how many people wish they had a glass of garbage whiskey? When in doubt, always treat your friend before yourself.
Hear that, Rico? Always give me the good scotch, is what he said.
Always think about that.
So that was etiquette advice about drinking and about driving from Mr. Nick Offerman.
Don't do those together, by the way, is our advice. Hey, we always love it when we can have listeners pose etiquette questions to guests like Nick in person. And this year we did a bunch of live shows at which we were able to provide that opportunity, including at a gig we did at WNYC's Green Space in New York City.
Our guests in New York were talk show legend Dick Cavett and Jessica Williams, ex-correspondent for The Daily Show, now co-host of the hit podcast Two Dope Queens. And an audience member named Michael asked them how to politely confront a friend who's good company at dinner, but who constantly complains about the food.
This tends to bring down everybody at the table. How do I politely tell him to keep his mouth shut and enjoy his food?
How is he good company? Like, how? That is the most annoying thing I've ever heard. What are his good features, really?
Well, I mean, basically up until that point, he's really good company. He's really funny and...
But when the food arrives, it's all downhill.
That's when the bitching starts.
Dick, what do you think?
Strikes me, since I was at the dentist the other day, that you might get a bunch of that fabulous rubbery wax that they hardens almost instantly.
Oh, they take a mold of your teeth,
Mix this in with the mashed potatoes. I think you can see where we're going.
Yeah, no, I think this is a good strategy. Are you listening, Michael? You weren't paying attention.
Cement his mouth, man.
Yeah, that's right. He's gonna use the dental molding clay.
Blend it with the mashed potatoes.
And then his mouth will be shut.
Yeah.
Do you know a good dentist?
I got his card.
All right. Live advice from the etiquette duo of Dick Cavett and Jessica Williams.
Sounds like a legal firm, Cavett and Williams. All right. And finally, as we all know, the biggest news of the year was the new season of Full House on Netflix. We're kidding. It was the election. And back on the eve of the first presidential debate, we got etiquette advice from New York Times political columnist Maureen Dowd.
And a listener asked her a question which right now seems especially relevant.
Jack writes, when someone tweets disparaging things about you, how do you gauge whether to engage?
Well, I would say don't engage unless it's Donald Trump. Because this happened to me last weekend. He tweeted that I was a wacky, crazy, neurotic dope. Which really hurt my feelings because I thought I was special to him and I thought he would give me a customized nickname like Elizabeth Warren has Pocahontas and Chuck Todd has Sleepy Eyes. And then it's the same stuff he says about every woman journalist is just like wacky, crazy, neurotic dope. So I didn't feel special anymore.
So did you tweet at him?
Yeah. So I tweeted some stuff. And so he got my book up by 50 places on Amazon. So that guy can sell books.
Yeah. All right. Engage.
If he flames you, engage.
Oh. Maureen Dowd. Her book about this year's election is called The Year of Voting Dangerously.
Not to be confused with Tweeting Dangerously, which is hopefully a book we won't be reading soon. Oh. And if you've got questions about etiquette, online or otherwise, email them to us, please, at dinnerpartydownload.org.
All right, that just about concludes the Dinner Party Download for this week and for this year. Next week, an all-new episode featuring Mike Mills talking about his acclaimed new film, 20th Century Women. He says it's a love letter to his mother.
If you want like a real quick rundown of my mom, just put together Humphrey Bogart and Amelia Earhart, but lean a little bit more towards Humphrey Bogart.
Be sure to check out that show. But today's show came to you from senior producer Jackson Musker, associate digital producer Christina Lopez, and intern Kathleen McGovern. Big thanks to Larissa Anderson and Nina Patak for their work this year.
Ditto to Jake Gorski and all the engineers who pitched in, and a hearty welcome to our associate producer James Kim, who, as the new guy, will do all the work in 2017.
It'll just be James in a speak and spell. And now before we leave you, here's One for the Road, a song you can listen to on your way to or returning from this week's dinner parties. We're going to revisit a song recorded live at a show we did earlier this year in New York, and we've never shared it before.
Our favorite folk pop musician, Emmy the Great, serenaded us with a cover of a Sandy Denny tune. Appropriately for a year-end show, it's called Who Knows Where the Time Goes.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving. How can they know it's time for them to go? Before the winter's fire, I will still be dreaming. Have no thought of time. Who knows where the time goes? Who knows where the time goes? Sad deserted shore, fickle friends are leaving you. Oh, but do you know it's time for them to go? So till it's time to go, but come the storms of winter and the birds in spring again. Oh, I do not fear the time. Where the
Thanks for attending the Dinner Party Download, everyone. I'm Brendan Francis Noonan.
I'm Rico Galliano. See you in the new year.